1800 Direct TV. Ask them what channel is best.
Okay, Roger that. I think I have a paper that goes with all the channels.
All the a caller just came on the NASA TV on the web here, and it says that coverage is going to start at 9 p.m. Pacific time. Just, I don't know if you're watching that at the same time I am.
Hey, it's here, John.
Okay, 12 o'clock. Sounds good. I see that. Eric, go ahead.
Channel 346 on NASA, on direct. That's Direct TV. You guys get it? It's 346 on Direct TV.
Very good, Eric. Okay, I'm gonna poke around. I gotta turn my computer on. That's not in front of my station. It should be. Dick, over to you.
Right now I'm looking at the data sheet that you mailed me, Wes, on this modulation meter, which goes from, I think, a couple of megacycles up to 2 gigs. It's a kind of a scanner, isn't it? In other words, it could be used as a scanner because it covers so much frequency. WS2N, N2XJN, K2RIW.
So, yeah, I got NASA Select. He's right. That channel he gave us is right. I'm all together now. It's for Leo.
Okay, and so did you. This is the automatic modulation meter and was designed to simplify the task of measuring amplitude and frequency modulation on the signals from 1.5 megahertz to 2 gigahertz. It is being done by eliminating the need of tune local oscillator and make local level adjustment with the 257 speed measurement and reduce errors. And it is capable of AM and FM measurement, and the full accuracy over the frequency from 1.5 megahertz to 2 gigahertz is about, if I remember correctly, less than 1%. It's pretty interesting stuff. I have two of them right now. I happen to have a guest at my house and also be a guest of the owner of Wayne Care, which is the British company. Let me go. An extremely reputable name. Now, just to tell you a few words, Windcare is taking over every year about 30% of Hewlett Packard's customers right now in the field of LTR meters.
So you got two of these. I guess one is your personal position, or maybe both of them are. And have you done any off-the-air reception with it? And yet I haven't found the portion yet that tells me sensitivity. Is it intended to monitor a local transmitter, or can it do low-level off-the-air monitoring? Over to you, Wes.
Technically, the frequency range is 1.5 megahertz to 2 gigahertz. And the useful response would be reduce sensitivity up to 4 gigahertz if one stage. Two fitness ranges, 50 ohms and 600 ohms. Level of the sensitivity, 2 millivolts to 1 volt RMS. And the full specification for the noise accuracy applies to the input from 10 millivolts to the 1 volt for the local signal. but 2 millivolts is the typical. And I see right now, while I'm talking to you, I have a range that actually, okay, I had to minimize the range. I see my modulation right now, the flexion on the needle, and I'm in range 10, and this device automatically tuned to that frequency. I don't have to do anything. It does not have any knob on it, and it operates from the batteries as well.
Yeah, a real good receiver will receive a quarter of a microvolt. This has 2 millivolts, so if you wanted to use it as a full sensitivity receiver, you would want to put something like a 70 decibel gain preamplifier in front of it between the antenna and this instrument if you wanted to measure full sensitivity off the air signal. 2 millivolts is a fairly low sensitivity, so it's intended as a transmitter monitor or a local transmitter off the air reception device, not a remote transmitter off the air reception device, is my guess. Back to you, Wes.
The technology is about 10 years old, but because when CHIRR was approved by the government of the United States, then this device went to the Bureau and passed all of the tests. Now, even though the technology is not old, it is being widely used by the government facilities. Some of the applications are take it to the car and measure the signal around the airport. And device has FSD ranges, which I have no idea what is FSD ranges, from 1 kilohertz, 3 kilohertz, 10 kilohertz, 30 kilohertz, and 100 kilohertz. Modes, peak positive, peak negative, and mean deviation, which would be the average. Accuracy 2% of the full scale, plus minus 1% of reading with the 1 kilohertz tone.
I'm going to guess that FSD stands for full-scale deflection. In other words, if you're FM deviating plus or minus 100 kc for FM broadcast, FM broadcast over the air is plus or minus 75 kc peak. So you could set it for 100 kc of full-scale deflection and then measure those peaks and RMSs and so on. Because it doesn't have a RF tuning knob, if I brought this battery-operated instrument with an antenna to an airport, and an airport has a large number of individual signals coming on the air and off the air periodically, how could I tell it which one I want to listen to, if you happen to know? WS to K2LIW.
No, I do not know. He just told me the information that are not classified, and he gave me a chance to get familiar with these devices. I have also Wind Care Precision Magnetic Analyzer that I have purchased 2 years ago. It's a beautiful equipment, and I just made some of the upgrading on it. I'm extremely happy with the grab that I'm getting on that device. Now, did you have any previous experience with this kind of devices? But it says also residual FM is less than 20 hertz up to 100 megahertz, then 100 hertz to 500 megahertz, and 200 hertz to 1000 megahertz. Measured with 3.5 kilohertz AF500. If you could say a few words on it.
I saw that specification. That is telling you the spectral purity of its local oscillator. The residual FM, every oscillator whether it's crystal controlled or a voltage controlled oscillator or a phase lock loop, every oscillator has some amount of residual FM. And when you plot the magnitude of the residual FM versus frequency, they call it spectral purity. So that's defining for you the spectral purity of its internal local oscillator. And that gives you some idea as to what would happen if you tried to measure very small FM deviations from a particular signal you're analyzing. Eventually, as the FM deviation of the signal you want to measure gets small enough, the residual FM of the oscillator in your receiver, and I'm assuming this is a superheterodyne receiver, would eventually become dominant, if you know what I mean. So it's telling you where the low end of your very small FM deviation measurements could be. That's what I think it's saying. KQRIW, go ahead, Wes.
Okay, I see that. Well, I'm looking at the device right now and see the deflection of the needle as I'm talking to you, and it sets to the FM. It also operates in AM. And I have right now on the mean detector, which is the averaging. It doesn't give me a minus deviation. The gauss doesn't give me plus deviation. And there are at the lower part of the front panel some things that I do not understand. Right now I have it set on PSOPH, but in a row I have the first figure would be 750 microseconds, then it's PSOPH, and then it's 3.5 kilohertz, then it's 15 kilohertz, and then it's 60 kilohertz. I assume this is the bandwidth, but I'm confused with 750 microseconds and PSOPH.
I think I've heard that a FM discriminator de-emphasis network has a time constant of 12 microseconds or something like that. That tells you the rate of fall off of the de-emphasis network that's used in the discriminator of typical FM broadcast receiver. So they do rate the fall off in microseconds. And I'm guessing that that's the PDB roll off point, but I'm not sure. And why they do it in microseconds as opposed to kilohertz, I don't know. Because I guess it's not really a sharp filter. It is a filter with a particular shape to it, the de-emphasis network. I'm not sure what those letters stand for, but I think it's allowing you to select the appropriate de-emphasis network for the particular kind of broadcast signal you're looking at. I'm not sure, but Eric can probably tell us whether or not the de-emphasis network, which is analog television audio, versus FM broadcast audio, there might be slightly different. I know that there's an amount of deviation. I think the audio deviation FM on television was 25 kilohertz, and I think it's 75 kilohertz maximum for FM broadcast. Let's see if Eric is available for some comments on this. KE2EJ, if you're there. KQRIW in the tech net.
KQRIWK. FM broadcast, 75 microseconds. 75 microseconds. The maximum deviation, of course, is 75 kilohertz, which is actually a bandwidth of 150 kilohertz, which leaves you about 25 kilohertz per band edge. The emphasis in television is a little bit different. It still follows it depends. Well, there's no more analog FM transmissions. It used to be 25 microseconds, depending upon whether you were doing BTSC or not, or stereo. Plus, the deviation in television broadcasting used to have a couple of other subcarriers. You had something called a pro channel and a sub channel. It took up some additional room, which also changed the emphasis rate depending upon what the transmitter was tracking. Could you lie about your page here, Rick?
Okay, upon the, if you go to page 6 on it, it says the emphasis 750 microseconds, the emphasis 3 dB bandwidth, typically 12 hertz to 212 hertz, HF roll off, which I would like to explanation for that, at 12 dB decay.
Yeah, if I check 1 over 75 microseconds at 13.3 kilohertz, I'm guessing describing the de-emphasis network as having a 75 microsecond time constant is what I'm guessing it is. Are they saying it has a certain number of dB of roll-off of the RIAA or CCITT or one of these fancy curves? There's a fancy curve describing the roll-off characteristics of the de-emphasis network. I see de-emphasis here. It says 75 microseconds de-emphasis, 3 dB bandwidth, typically 12 hertz, 21.2 kilohertz, HF roll-off at 12 dB per decade. So, looks to me like all of those numbers are defining the shape of the de-emphasis filter network. Is that approximately what's taking place there, Paul? I mean, Eric, K2EJ, K2LAW.
Suppressed subcarrier? No.
radial sideband. Because at certain frequencies, the lower sideband was suppressed compared to the upper sideband. Because in normal amplitude modulation, your carrier is literally being beat against the upper sideband and the lower sideband. They're being vector combined at each instant of time, and that gives you the peak to valley ratio of the modulation. Because at the higher offset frequencies of the residual sideband suppression of video, did that mean the higher frequency component did not have a linear modulation characteristic? If I suppress one sideband compared to the other, what results is a lower peak to valley of amplitude modulation and a little bit of residual phase modulation sneaks in. Was that intentional, or was there some kind of correction procedure applied to make that go away? K2EJ, K2LIW.
K2LIW, correction to make sure that the frequency response to the beam works out so that it's linear at the top. Don't forget, you only need the information between the zero and plus, let's say, and don't forget that the maximum output factor was produced in sync, which has no initial information other than sync. The fact that the lower sideband is literally chopped off, when we call it suppressed. By the way, we still do that in APS-C. We get rid of the bottom part of it. That compensation, that pre-compensation that the transmitter does, tries to linearize that portion of it. And actually, in the AM broadcast transmitter, there's another filter up at the top end of about almost 4 minutes that starts to slice everything off so that you don't bang into the sound carrier.
That makes some sense. And the chrominance subcarrier beating with the video information would, I think, ordinarily give you a kind of a herringbone on the screen. By choosing that exact frequency, 3.579545445, was that chosen to make the herringbone below the resolution capability of the average screen, or was that chosen to make sure that the herringbone pattern moves in a characteristic way that you don't see it or makes it sit still? A naive person would think the chrominance is going to be beating against the video and giving you some kind of a tone of video on the screen, if you know what I mean. Your signal is a little bit noisy, Eric, but we're hearing you. KE2EJ, K2LIW.
I'm using an HD. Sorry about that. I'm listening to EchoLink. I've got my listening through EchoLink, but I can't listen at the same time I talk. The thing that you're looking for is something called chromacol. That's why they actually changed the horizontal frequency from 15750 to 15748 or 15746, I forget exactly what the number is. And what it is a product of the vertical frequency divided by the horizontal frequency of 3 times the subcarrier rate, and what it does is it prevents the dot from falling, and it eliminates the protocol, chromacol. You might call it herringbone. Herringbone is a negative function which has to relate to the sound carrier beating into the picture carrier. So there's multiple things going on here.
So by carefully offsetting the horizontal sweep rate, that is 1750, 15750, be paying 15734 or something like that. And the 60 hertz of video became 59.9 something. So by offsetting these numbers, I think you're saying the chroma crawl would then sit still, or would crawl in such a way that the eye would no longer resolve it. How was that chosen, Paul? Go ahead. Eric.
It's beginning to come back. 3.475 from what I remember. And what it does is it makes the dot structure stand still, so you don't actually see coma crawl. The reason for that is you can actually go to 14.31818, and from that divide down to 3.579545. You can divide down to 15.739. And do another division, you can bring that back down to 59.9475 and a couple more digits.
So therefore, everything became synchronized. Your vertical rate, your horizontal rate, and your coma rate all became synchronized. And I don't think they worried about sync or non-sync with the 4.5 megacycles of offset of the FM carrier. No synchronization was directly required there. Is that true, Paul? Here we go, Eric. K2EJ, K2LIW.
That's correct. Now, what happened is we started to make digital video. I'm not talking about digital television, but we went from feeding analog to coaxial cable, 8281, to something that we call SDI, or serial digital interface. And what we did was we actually changed, if you break it down in time, the number of pixels, okay, and we wound up with, 640 by 480, and we did that by making the dot frequency 13.5 megahertz, which then we would do the division sound, but that always dealt with, component video, meaning luminance and R minus Y, V minus Y, which means blue minus 30, luminance, and red minus the luminance, giving us a different signal to display the information, the color information. And what else? There was another thing. Also brought it down into the vertical range and the flanking, we could now put data. You could also put data in a period where the horizontal would exist. And that became another standard, and that's what you see on your computer these days.
I vaguely remember the very early color TV sets had residuals of the chroma somewhat visible on the screen. The later design sets that were either using SAW filters or digital signal processing, so using fancier filters, and as I remember, all of that chroma characteristic disappeared. Was that done with very sharp brick wall filtering? KE2EJ, K2LIW?
It's in fact that to the improvements of those lock loops. Being able to lock the color oscillator very accurately and very stably to what's coming across there in terms of sync. Because you only got 8 cycles of color burst from which you oscillate a flywheel. From that, you have to divide and you have to phase the layer so that you have an in phase and a quadrature phase component, so you can run a thermally balanced modulator to actually have four quadrant multipliers, if you want to think of it that way, to be able to separate the prominent two different vectors, which is the I component or the Q component, and have them be stable and locked to each other. And then you got rid of the chroma herring bones and the little chroma noise that you used to get. You also got improvements in the delay line, which delays the luminance by one line to match up with the chroma, because when you modulate the stuff, it's a little bit of delay. You got to put it back together.
That delay line was one horizontal scan line, which I think is 63 microseconds. 63 microseconds, to me, is a long amount of time. And you're trying to take a fairly broadband signal and delay it 63 microseconds and keep it flat going through that delay. Any idea how that delay line was built? Was that a torsional piece of wire? Was that crystal? How was that delay line built? 63 microseconds is That's a lot of microseconds. That's the equivalent of 63,000 feet in air. KQEJ, KQRIW.
KQRIW, KQEJ. The first delay line was actually cardboard tubes and wire wrapped around it. A lot of wire. Of course, we have the inductance of it.
Now you're making it sound like the coma burst only occurred on line number 10 of the vertical interval. Back to you on that one, Eric.
Okay, first of all, the burst is given on each line except for lines 252 until line 10. Okay, but the idea is that if you plot that off,
idea as to why the Comenon oscillator was running on a quartz crystal at 3.5 megacycles. I think only a quartz crystal would have enough Q so that when it's properly set up as a voltage-controlled oscillator, it stands a chance of having enough low jitter, spectral purity, call it what you like, to meet all these requirements. That really had to be a crystal that was no simple free-running oscillator on a well-designed set. Is that a good way of putting it, Eric? K2EJ, KQRIW? Is about 50% noise, 50% audio. I'm wearing earphones. I'm hearing you pretty well. I'm listening to you on the input where you're only 20% noise. Other people listening to you through the repeater are going to be a little bit unhappy with your audio. Thank you for all that information, Eric. So it looks like you got a nice piece of test equipment there, Wes. And Wes, at the rate you're going, I think you're trying to give John competition as to who can assemble a laboratory with the most number of pieces of test equipment. N2XJN, K2RIW. Go ahead, Wes.
No, I don't. John has more than 300 pieces of equipment. He's still number one. Well, most of the equipment that I have, I've got for Penny. Some of them I've got from universities. They were very much cooperative. And from other institutions, some of them through the contact with people who share the same idea as I have. So, yeah, it's okay. Just like it. Now, I have a question. On page number 6, you have a psophometric, P-S-O-P-H-O-metric. What is that, and what does that stand for? Complies with CCITT volume VP53. And then you have another one. It says the front panel AF output from BNC, okay? But then it says level 0 dB approximately for FSD. Enter it here.
Yeah, that word you're looking for, I think it's called sophomoric, sophometric. When you tailor noise, or tailor the shaping of broadband Gaussian noise in order to simulate an audio signal in a real broadcast environment, so there's something called the CCIT curve, the RIAA curve, sophomoric noise, ink noise. There's various ways of shaping the noise that's used on the test equipment in order to simulate real conditions. That's what I think is going on, but I'm not positive on this one. I'm hearing KD2CID. I think that's John and Pat Shaw, and I think he wants to add something to this. KD2CID, if I got you correctly, go ahead, John. K2LIW. K2LIW.
I wasn't about this particular subject, but I wanted to add some expertise on.
Yeah, I just need a few more answers, which is, what is FSD?
I think FSD stands for full-scale deflection. In other words, that's setting the gain of the meter, or it's setting the gain of the discriminator circuit, so that what amount of deviation. I can set narrowband FM where I'm aligning the discriminator so that it works correctly for audio that's plus or minus 5 kilohertz of FM deviation, full-scale deflection. If it was audio being used for an FM broadcast transmitter for the audio of a television set, plus or minus 25 kilohertz would be where you'd be setting the full-scale deflection, FSD.
And it says over there on page number 6, it's 0.2.50. Level 0 dB approximately for FSD.
I'm not sure I know what the 0.2 means.
So it says, like in the middle of the page, it says AF output front panel BNC, and then it says level, and it says 0 dB for approximately for FSD, full scale deflection. That is kind of confusing.
If they defined everything for a 600 ohm audio circuit, which was the standard at one time, a 0 dBm 600 ohms is a very specific amount of voltage and or current into a 600 ohm load. And so the way you set the discriminator, you can set the discriminator for high, medium, and low gain, so to speak, depending on whether or not it is a low, medium, and high amount of FM deviation you intend to measure. So there's an ideal discriminator design, ideal discriminator circuit, that you could use for each amount of intended FM deviation of the signal that you want to measure. At first you would think you could take a discriminator that's good for plus or minus 75 kilohertz and use it for making a plus or minus 5 kilohertz measurement. And the answer is usually no, because when you've only got 5 kilohertz of deviation on a discriminator that's looking for plus or minus 75, that's what, a 15 to 1 ratio, 15 squared is 225, that's 200, that's almost 24 or so dB lower. In other words, if I lowered the amount of audio by 24 dB and go through the exact same discriminator, I'm going to run into a low signal-to-noise ratio problem. All of a sudden, the noise of my discriminator and the residual FM modulation of my local oscillator, of my superhead, is going to start becoming a problem. So they're trying to tell you, I believe, that you must choose the right discriminator, the right full-scale deflection discriminator, for the nature of the particular signal you're trying to measure. They're defining how many volts comes out and call it 0 dBm on a 600 ohm line. That's what I think is going on, but I'm not sure. Over to you, Wes.
Okay, interesting. And then another question is, how much gain from the additional amplifier? I have quite a few of them. Do I need to bring it to, say, 0.1 microvolts? And on page number 6, also, that's page number 7, is 150 hertz, not filter option, if you could give me a few words on it.
Yeah, the notch filter option at 150 hertz. I've seen notch filters used at 1 kilohertz on systems where you're trying to measure the total amount of harmonic distortion. You use a 1 kilohertz modulation rate at some particular deviation into an FM signal. After discrimination, after reception, you notch out the 1 kilohertz, measure everything that's left over, and that's a measurement of total harmonic distortion. Eric did say he had something to add to this, so go ahead, Eric. KE2EJ, K2LIW.
Okay, I'm hoping you can hear me better now.
Except for the feedback, you sound a lot
slowed. Okay, first of all, just let me point out a couple things. What you're calling 0 dBm at 600 ohms, really, we use a slightly different standard because it sounds like you've got a piece of gear that's intended for broadcast. First of all, we consider a 0 U, or a volume unit, okay, can be 0 VU at 0 dBm plus 4 dBm, or if you want to go by the telephone standards, it's plus 8 dBm. That's one thing. But in the broadcast world, we always use Bessel null as the way to determine deviation and calibrate things. So when you're doing FM, as in an FM broadcast band, you've got a filter in the receiver that's actually 150 kilohertz wide, and in a television receiver, you've got a bandpass filter in your IF that's 50 kilohertz wide, which then, when you finally go into the discriminator, gives you different values. And by the way, the 150 hertz is a notch filter to measure the preemphasis roll-off on the low end in either broadcast, either FM or television. K2RWK2BX.
So, I'm not quite sure why you would notch out 150 hertz if you're trying to measure the amount of roll-off on the low end of the, I guess we're talking about the de-emphasis network. I may have that wrong. Back to you, Eric.
records and audio tape recorders, there's an NTSC specification that when you measure total harmonic distortion, you actually put a hole at 150 hertz, because in television, it's really from around 100 hertz to 15 kilohertz max. And FM radio, it's from 20 hertz to 20 kilohertz. So I think the 150 kilohertz I've always dealt with in terms of television. And there's a reason for that roll-off, because if you listen to sync bars in the video signal, you'll hear it's at 60 and 120 hertz.
So, since the sync is 60 hertz, and since the audio in television goes down to 50 hertz, doesn't that give you a high probability of having the 60 hertz frame rate, field rate, come out of the loudspeaker of a television receiver if it's not very well designed? Back to you on that one, Eric.
What used to happen in the older TV sets, and they had a circuit in there that was called the sound trap. And what it did was it prevented now you can think of it as NMR from the video period banging into the FM receiver, which of course is supposed to be completely FM, but in those days, you know, you AM modulated the edge of it, you would hear it.
So that sound trap was trying to suppress the 60 hertz or 59.99 hertz component of the video signal from getting into the audio. So you notched out 60 hertz in the audio, that would both notch out what's coming out of your power supply as well as what's coming out of your vertical deflection. Is that true, Eric?
Yeah, but it was done at IF, so it wasn't actually done at the audio path. It was done to separate the AM modulation from the FM modulation, from the AM impressing that loud 60 hertz, because that's the strongest part of the signal. That's where the maximum energy of the transmitted video signal is.
Okay, so the suppression of 50 hertz was taking place in the IF. Huh. What did that circuit look like? Because the IF is running at something like 41 megacycles, as I remember. How do you produce a 51 hertz notch, a 50 hertz notch in the IF running at 41 megacycles? K2EJ, K2LAW?
I don't remember the exact frequencies, but the idea is to roll off anything below a certain frequency. It's somewhere around 4.2 or 4.1 megahertz. I forget what it was. There's, if you multiply it out, you know, I could look it up, but basically it prevented any energy from 4.1 or 4.2, I think 4.2, and below from reaching the IF that's part of the sound IF that goes to the discriminator. Thank you.
Now it's making sense. Yes. The sound was offset by 4.5 megacycles, its sound carrier, compared to the video carrier. And any of that 4.5 meg offset that went down the video IF strip could give you grief. And so somewhere you split off the sound IF from the video IF, and you have separate demodulators. All of that's now done inside of a chip, and all of it's not done at all now that we have an ATSC. And I'm still looking forward to the day I put up a rotator on my television aerial, because I do get a fair amount of inter-symbol distortion, where my television set is getting a nice strong signal, but it says weak carrier. In other words, it's not getting the right digital demodulated signal-to-noise ratio. The bit error rate is intolerable. So from periodically, my favorite channels fade out on me. And with a rotator on a high-gain television aerial, I know that an awful lot of that is correctable, and it changes the right direction to aim the aerial. We change from day to day. I'm one of the very few people that I know of in Huntington Town using over-the-air television broadcast. I'm only 30-some-odd miles from Empire. So, from my point of view, the true range of ATSC television over-the-air broadcast is considerably lower than it was with analog television. Do you agree or disagree on that one, Eric? KE2EJ, KE2LAW?
K2RIW, K2J. Actually, I disagree with you, and I'll tell you why, because you, unfortunately, are a victim of bad engineering provided by the chief engineer of CBS, because they want to cover, and we've had this discussion, they want to cover Brooklyn. If you live to the north, or you live to the west, or you live even to the west, you wouldn't be saying that. As you go and search for, when you do put a rotor on your antenna, and you do go and search for other channels coming from other places, you won't have that problem. You won't have a different opinion. Actually, there are certain channels that you get now that you don't have any problems with at all. Even though your antenna is pretty high up, don't forget that you are sitting lower in altitude, so to speak, in elevation, because you have this huge hill that separates Nassau and Suffolk County, which is, for most people, is a big problem. On one hand, yes, you can watch snowy, noisy pictures that will give you information that digital television won't give you. But in terms of, if you're going to rate grade B to grade B, they're about the same. K2RWK2J.
Okay, as I see it, the problem exists for the people that are east of Empire. The broadcast engineers right now, what do they believe is the range to the east on Long Island of their ATSC signals? Over to you, Eric.
Well, it's like anybody else. It's a matter of opinion. It depends who you talk to. If you talk to the guy who works with Fox and he's doing his thing, they'll give you the 60-mile circle. If you talk to the VHF guys, like WRDT, they'll give you the 50-mile circle. If you talk to the Channel 21 guys, you'll find that it's going to give you the 40-mile circle. Although I found that actually people further east than I ever expected are picking the step up. And west we go all the way into the middle of New Jersey. Actually, we've got a cable system that's something like almost 80 miles away. They get a nice solid signal from us, and it never disappears.
If I had to make a guess, Eric, from what I see by looking at people's rooftops as I drive around Long Island, it is my guess that east of Huntington, 33 miles east of Empire, east of Huntington, 33 miles away, I think less than 1% of the television viewing population is using over-the-air television broadcast at this time. KE2EJ, K2LAW.
The time is 12 a.m.
7. K2RIW, K2J. Well, I got a couple of things for you to think about. Okay, the demographics of Long Island is different
than the demographics of other places around the country. Right? Even though the economy is bad, our populace is actually, our median income is way higher than most of the rest of the country. So people can afford the luxury of paying for satellite and cable. So there's very little reason for them to use antennas. That's the first thing. There's also the aesthetic point of view of not having the antenna on your house. But let's talk about, since we are in New York, let's talk about New York City. If you're going to guess how many people are on cable and how many people can afford cable in and around New York, because New York has an interesting demographic where you have the very poor and the well-to-do upper middle class and rich. And New York City seems to have very little middle class. So how many folks would you say are on antennas or rabbit ears in and around New York City, where the discrepancy between income is rather large? And of that group, how many can afford to buy cable and how many suffer through having rabbit ears and stuff like that in Manhattan or Brooklyn or Queens or Staten Island? Well, not Staten Island, but the Bronx. You'll find out that the number of over-the-air viewers increases dramatically, and it's been documented by Nielsen. It was very well documented when the World Trade Center went down, and it's kind of documented by the phone call that the stations get. K2IW, K2J.
Nielsen called me up yesterday, found out I'm that rare person on Long Island using over-the-air television broadcast, and they asked me questions for almost a solid 45 minutes. 33 year old. Bye-bye for now. That was TechNet number 1410. Good luck with watching Curiosity, North of Land, starting at around 20 minutes after 1 this morning. Keep your fingers crossed. Bye-bye for now, you all. KQLIW. Good night, John. See you down the line.
Good night, all of you, and by the way, the coverage on that is going full swing at this point, so tune in if you can. Thank you.
Welcome to the W2CL. a.m. Next, tonight at 8:30, WGBL repeater system.
Thank you.